All right, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Ham with Bet, just do a little chazara from what we ended off with yesterday, which is Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ki Avena Italia, when I was a young man, Amina Milta, the Sheilna, the Sabia, I said something that I asked of the elders, Vishtaka Kavati, and it turned out that it was like I had suggested. Chamat, this is from the cities that we discussed, that the Are Mivtzar, which were Ha Tzidim, Tzer, Chamat, Rakat, Vikinaret. So these were cities that had walls in the time of Yeshua Binun, and the Gemara is discussing these locations of Chamat, Rakat, and Kinaret. So Rabbi Yochanan suggests that Chamat zu Tveria, v'lam nigra shema Chamat, ashum chamei Tveria. So it's called Chamat because of the hot springs that are in Tveria. Rakat zu Tzipori, v'lam nigra Rakat, mishum demidlaya k'rakta nenaro. Because it was like the steep banks of the river, because Tzipori was up in the mountains. And we'll see that the Gemara discusses with regards to Mekabelei Shabbat, that you should be from the people of Tveria when you're Mekabel Shabbat, and you should be like the people of Tzipori, Keshemotzim et Shabbat. Since Tveria is down in the valley, low down, it's at the level of the Yam Kinneret, which happens to be below sea level. So therefore the sun disappears from the horizon or behind the mountains much earlier. So if you accept Shabbat in Tveria, you're accepting Shabbat much earlier. And then you should be Mimiltzi Shabbat Bitzipori, which is up on the mountain. So when you're up on the mountain, that you can see the sun on the horizon for much longer when it's setting in the western side. And therefore your Shabbat will go out much later. So you should be from the one who accepts Shabbat in Tveria and let Shabbat go in Tzipori, which means that you'll bring in Shabbat early and let it go late. But that's the locations of these two places, is Tveria and Tzipori. Kinaret Zuginosar. Is referring to Ginosar, let me question Kinaret. Dimitike pera kikala de kinare. Because its fruits are sweet like the sound of the lyre. Amarova. Umi iga namanda ma rakat lav Tveria hi? Is there anybody who doesn't say that the rakat is identified with Tveria? Rabbi Yochanan said Chamat is Tveria. And Rova says, no, rakat is Tveria. Bahaki shachiv inish hocha. When someone passes away over here meaning Bavel, hatam saftile. In Eretz Yisrael, they give a eulogy for him. Hachi, this is what they say. Gadol hu b'sheshach. He was a great man in Sheshach. As Rashi says, Sheshach is Bavel in Atbash. When you exchange the first letter for the last, the second the letter for the second to last letter. So bet is the second letter. So the second last letter is shin. So they turn in shin. And then the lamet swaps for the chof. So you have Sheshach, which is Bavel. V'shem lo bereket. And he has a name in Shemlo Barakat. And he has a name in Rakat. So there you see that the person who passes away in Bavel, so he was known or he was a big person in Bavel, but he's also known in Rakat. Now, here there's nothing in the statement that makes you believe that Rakat is Tveria, but the assumption being that since Tveria was the center of Torah at that point in time, so when they say Berakat, Rakat must be the reference to Tveria. So when the Saftanim, when they talk about this individual passed away, they say that he is a great person in Bavel. B'shem lo Berakat, but his name reached as far as Tveria. B'chim aski Aron l'hotam. And when they bring him up to Eretz Yisrael in his Aron, Safti le'ochi. This is how they eulogized him. So they had the practice in their day as well to live outside of Eretz Yisrael. And to come in your room after you passed away to show up and make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael and be buried in Eretz Yisrael. So when they brought the Aron up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Safti Leochi, this is what they used to say. Oavei Sridim, Yoshvei Rakot. So as Rashi says, Oavei Sridim is Oavei Yisrael. Yoshvei Rakot, the inhabitants of Rakot, Tzu'u Bikiblu Haruge Omek. Go out and greet those that were killed in the valley being Bavel, as we know that Bavel is deep down in a valley, it has found along a lower plain. So therefore, again, Yoshvei Rakat, he's speaking to Tveria as the center, and saying that those that lived in Rakat should go out and greet Yoharugi Emek. Kinach Nafshei de Rabbi Zera, and when Rabbi Zera passed away, Ptach Aleha Usafdano, one of the eulogizers said this, Eretz Shinar Hara V'Yalda, the Eretz Shinar, which is a reference to Bavel, conceived him and gave birth to him. Eretz Tzvi, which references Eretz Yisrael, either because of the deer or Tzvi, because the Gemara says in other places that it's fast and that its fruits ripen very quickly. Gidla shaushueha, that it brought up or grew the one of its delight. One of its delight means that of Bavel. The pride of Bavel was brought up by Eretz Israel. And that's because Rabbi Zeira made Aliyah to Eretz Israel. He leaves Bavel and makes Aliyah to Eretz Israel. It's found in the Agadot about Eretz Israel at the end of the Gemara in Ketubot. Oinala Amra Rakat. Whoa! Is us, says Rakat, meaning Tveria, ki ibda kli chemdata, because it lost its utensil of glory, meaning that, or its beauty. So Rabbi Zeira, who was a Gadol B'Torah in Eretz Israel, so again, the reference to Rakat. So over here you see three different eulogies. The first eulogy for someone who passes away in Bavel, and it seems to be that they were buried in Bavel. The second eulogy for someone who lived their entire life in Bavel and only comes once they passed away, they make Aliyah in their Aron. And then the third case is where a person makes Aliyah while they're alive, Rabbi Zeira, and then that's the eulogy for that individual. But in all of these cases, Rakat is the reference to Eretz Yisrael, Tveria being, that, again, the center of Torah, a location that, in the time of Tanaim, where most of the Jews live in the northern part of Eretz Yisrael, and that is this part of the center of Torah, because it's the bridge between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael. So over there, Tveria is the, in a sense, capital of that area. And so each time it mentions Rakat, it's obviously referencing Tveria. So we see that Rakat is Tveria. That's what Rava is saying. So then he says, Elam Rava. Rava changes what Rabbi Yochanan says, and he redefines these cities. He says, Chamat, Zo Chamei Gerar. That refers to the Chamei Gerar, or the hot springs of Gerar. Rakat, Zu Tveria. Rakat is Tveria. Kineret, Zu Ginisar. So, Lamini Krashama Rakat. So, why is Tveria called Rakat? Shafilu Rekanim Sheba Mleim Mitzvot Girimon. Because even the empty ones of Tveria are full of mitzvot Girimon. I mean, it seems like it was a very religious city, a city in which the people were known for doing mitzvot and being shomrei Torah u'mitzvot. Rabbi Yirmiyahu Amar, Rakat Shema. No, its real name is Rakat. V'lamad yikra Shema Tveria. Tveria was its nickname. Shoshevet b'tibura shel Eretz Yisrael, because it sits in the center of Eretz Yisrael. Again, obviously, Tveria is not the center of Eretz Yisrael. So either you have to say that in the time of the Tanaim, where again, where the northern area of Eretz Yisrael is inhabited, that Tveria is the center of the area in the north, or because the Beit Din and the Yeshiva moved up to Tveria and Rabbi is found in Tveria, it is the center of Torah. And the same way that Yerushalayim is Kimitzion Tetzei Torah, is considered to be the center, so to now, Tveria, which is now the place of Torah, is the center of Eretz Yisrael at that time. Rabba Amar, Rakat Shema, Rakat is its true name. Alamini Krash Matveria, Shetova Riata. Because it's a nice place. As the Tosafot says, what does it mean, Tova Riata? Shayu Sham Ginotu Pardesim. There are gardens and there are orchards. It's a beautiful place. It is a tranquil and wonderful place to live. So it's a nice place to see and to live in. So that's why Tveria is the nickname. Right from here, we're going to move on to other names of places where the Gemara is trying to identify a name that is found in Tanakh, and they want to identify it with a modern city, modern being in the time of the Gemara. Amar Ze'era, Kitron, Zo Tzipori. This place, Kitron, that is mentioned, we'll see in a second, is Tzipori. Balam Nikrat Shema Tzipori. So why is it called Tzipori, which was the name of the city in the time of the Gemara? Sheoshevet Beroshahar Kitzipor, because it sits on the top of a mountain like a bird. The Kitron Tzipori? Is Kitron really Tzipori? Va'Kitron b'chalko shel Zvulun avai. Kitron is in the area of Zvulun. Dichtiv, Zvulun lo horishit yoshvei Kitron, vet yoshvei nahalol. So here in the beginning of Shoftim, it's describing what is going to precipitate the problems that come in Sefer Shoftim and the difficulties that Bnei Israel are going to face, which is that in the conquest of Eretz Yisrael, Yoshua leads the people through the major parts of conquest, and then he sends the Shvatim out to their separate locations to finish off the conquest in their individual areas. And in those individual areas, they're supposed to clear out the inhabitants of Eretz Canaan. But Zvulun, They do not remove the inhabitants of Kidron, and they do not remove the inhabitants of Nahalol, but rather they make them lamas. They tax them, they subjugate them, but they do not remove them. And the Navi tells us in Shoftim that that's going to basically precipitate the problem or lead to the problem in the future, which is these inhabitants are going to cause the people to leave the Derech Hashem to worship Avodah Zarah and cause problems for Zvulun because they didn't take care of the inhabitants of their area. Now, it's in the area of Zvulun, so then it can't be that Kitron and Tzipori are synonymous. Uzvulun mitraim amidotav hava. And Zvulun used to complain. Now, amidotav here does not mean about his character, but rather, as Rashi says, midah. Midah here means like midah keneged midah on his chelek, on that which he received. So Zvulun complained about his lot in life. Shinemar, Zvulun am cherif nasholamut. Vinaftali amirome sadeh. Zvulun were willing to risk their lives to the death in the battle against Sisra, and Naphtali likewise on the high places of the fields. That these are the Shvatim that came to the call of Barak in order to do battle with Sisra. So, Matam, why does he want to die? Why does he feel that way? Mishum de Naphtali amarume sadeh. Because Naphtali got the great fields on the high fields. So now, truthfully, the pasuk that you're quoting is from Sefer Shoftim by Shirat Dvorah. And over there it said that Zvulun achav nafsholamut was that Zvulun was fearless in its coming to battle against Sisra, and it's a compliment of Zvulun. Here the Gemara is reading that Zvulun amcharif nafsholamut is that they are cursing themselves or they are upset with their lot in life to the point that they want to die, meaning that they are unhappy. Why are they unhappy? Because of Naphtali amirome sadeh. Amar Zvulun ifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, L'achiyai natat lehem sadot ugranim. To my brethren, you gave them fields and you gave them vineyards. V'li natata harim ugvot. And you gave me a bunch of mountains and peaks. L'achai natat lehem aratzot. To my brethren, you gave them lands. V'li natata yamim v'narot. And me, you gave bodies of water and rivers. I've given you a gift in your possession and your area, which they all need you for, and that is the chilazon. Shenemar, amim hari krau, sham yizbechu zivchei tzedek. They should call the people to the mountain. They should offer up the sacrifices, the korbanot of the righteous. Kishefa yamim inaku. They shall take of the gifts of the sea. Usfunei timunei chol. They will take of the treasures that are hidden in the sand. Tani Rav Yosef. Sfunei. What is this bracha that's given to Zvulun in Zot HaBracha? Usfunei timunei chol. And as Rashi says over here, usfunei, the Gemara is translating as safun, which means something important, a treasure. And then, that's talking about the chilazon from which you get the tchelet. Timunei zutarit. Rashi translates tarit as tunina. It's a type of fish, which is not tuna, but rather the tunny fish. And then chol zuzuchuchit levana. It has a clean and pure type of sand. It creates the white glass that is an expensive, sought-after type of glass that's made from this white sand. So Hashem says, I gave you these three gifts, which everybody's going to want from you. Samar lefana, ribono sholam, mimodiani. Who's going to let me know? I mean, these are items that are found in nature, and anybody who traverses this area or anybody comes to that area can pick up whatever they want. So he says, Amalo sham yizbechu zivchei tzedek. There they will bring up the zvachim of tzedek, the righteous offerings. Siman ze'eyedecha, this will be the sign to you. Kol anotel mimcha b'lo damim, anybody who takes these gifts from you without paying, einu mo'il b'prakmatya shelo klum, his business will not succeed. His business dealings will fail if he takes it without paying. And the reason is because sham yizbechu zivchei tzedek, because just like by a korban, one is precluded from bringing gezel for a korban, meaning Hashem does not accept a korban that comes from gezel, from theft, so too over here, the business dealings of these individuals will not succeed if they get it through theft, meaning they get it without paying. V'isagadat cho kitron zutzipori. If you really think that Kitron and Tzipori are my mitraim al midotav, what was he complaining about? V'ha'havya tzipori, milta da difatuva. If you had tzipori, that's a wonderful place. V'chitema, the reason that tzipori, even if he had it, wasn't such a great section or part of his Yerusha, because delayed bazavat chalavud vash, because it doesn't have the flowing milk and honey, which Rashi describes as ha'izim ochlim te'inim. The goats are eating the figs, v'advash notef mehen, and the honey is dripping off of them, v'achalav zav min ha'izim, and the milk is flowing from the goats, nasim g'minachal, and they become like a river together. So the mixture of the honey of the figs together with the milk of the goats makes it zavat chalav udvash. Others say that the dvash is dvash shel tamarim and not shel te'enim, that it's talking about dates and not figs. But either way, the goats are participating, enjoying the fruits, and together with the sweetness, the liquid that's emerging from the fruits, and the milk flowing from the goats, you have an eretz zavat chalav udvash.
I saw the flowing milk and honey of tzipori.
It was 16 by 16 mil. And there are, each 16 mil is equivalent of 4 parsaot, so it was 4 by 4 parsaot.
That
maybe it wasn't as big as what his brothers got, meaning that he got a nice piece of zavat chalav udvash, but it wasn't what everybody else got. I saw the flowing milk and honey of the entire Eretz Yisrael. It was the equivalent of the distance between these two locations, Mibei Kove until Akra Dutubakni, Esrim V'Tartin Parse Urka, 22 parsaot long, Upuchya Shita Parse, and 6 parsaot in width. So if you do the math here, in terms of square parsaot of Zavat Chalav Udvash, then the entire Eretz Yisrael has 6 by 22, or 132. Tzipori has 4 by 4 parsaot, which is equivalent of 16. 16 into 132 is better than 1/12. It's closer to 1/8 in the mathematical relationship between them. And therefore, you got a disproportionate amount of Zavat Chalav Udvash. So that certainly cannot be the problem or the complaint that he is raising. So Gemara says, Afil hochi, sadot ukramim adifalei. In the end, he still wanted fields and kramim. They were more important, or they were more valued to him. Dekanami dichtiv. You can see that from his complaint, because it says, Naftali amurume sadeh shmamina. His complaint relates to what he saw that Naftali had, which was the murume sadeh. So despite all the goodness that was in his territory, nevertheless, he was still jealous or still really wanted what was in the territory of others, which was the Pardesim, Sadot, and Kramim, to have those be the gifts that he has in his area, and not the gifts that Hashem tells him are found in his lot, or in his area where his Shevet settled. So in the end, we could claim that Tzipori is identified with Kitron, because even though it sounds like Tzipori should not be found in the area of Zvulun, because Zvulun is complaining about not having these items, and Tzipori does have these items, nevertheless, the Gemara says that it wasn't enough. Even though he had Tzipori, he wanted a chelek that had an entirety, or the span of his entire area where the Shevet inhabited would have all of these Sadot, Kramim, and Pardeseot. Okay, Amar Rabbi Abo, ve'ekron te'aker. Ekron will be uprooted. Zuke zari bat edom. This is Caesarea, the daughter of Edom. She yoshevet ben acholot, the tzitz among the sands. Ve'hi aita yateid tukuad Yisrael b'mei Yevanim. That was a peg that stuck to Bnei Yisrael in the times of the Greeks. And when the Chashmonim succeeded in defeating the enemy, and they won the battle, Achidat Migdal Shir, that's the gears that we have here. But others say that Achidat, if you look on the side here, it's Achidat Migdal Tzur. It was the tower that was captured
of the song of Shir, or most likely Tzur, which is of Tyre. And that would make sense because in the time of the Yvanim, these were Greco-Syrians that were coming from the north, who probably had their capital up in the area of Tyre. And therefore, Tzur would be the right representation here. Later on, the Romans conquer this area, and then the Romans make Caesarea the capital of the Roman governors of Judea, or the Roman governors of Eretz Yisrael, were housed or seated inside of Caesarea. So Caesarea represents this foreign rule over Eretz Yisrael. And that's what it means, Ve'akron Te'aker, that it will be uprooted, that is, Caesarea Batedom, that is this city of the seat of the governments that are ruling over Eretz Yisrael, that will be uprooted. Amar Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk in Zechariah, v'hasiroti damav mipiv, v'shikutzav miben shinav, I will remove the blood from his face or his mouth, shikutzav, and the disgusting things miben shinav, from that which is between his teeth, v'nishar gam hu lalukeinu, and he will still remain for his God. So here the Gemara explains, v'hasiroti damav mipiv, what does it mean that I will remove the blood from his mouth? Ze beit bamyo. It says the Beit Bamyo, which, according to Rashi, refers to the area where they worshipped Avodah Zarah. There was a house, or one of the leading gods of the Romans, and an area of Avodah Zarah. Or Beit Bima. Bima is the area where they brought their sacrifices before the Avodah Zarah. V'shikutzav miben shinav, ze Beit Galya shelahen. Beit Galya, again, the literal translation means the open place, or the pile. Again, Rashi says that these were the leading gods of Edom, of the Romans at the time. So the negativity that's said in the Pasuk in Zechariah is that Hashem will remove these bad places from you, so it's going to remove these areas of Avodah Zarah. Mishar gam hu lalukeinu, what does that mean, that they will remain those that are to God? Elu bate kenesiot u bate midrashot shebe'edom. These are the shuls and the batei midrash that are found in Edom. In that the good things that are in Edom, they will be preserved. Those things that were dedicated to God, those things will remain afterwards. They will not be destroyed. And then the Gemara says, Vaya ka'aluf bi'uda ve'kron kibusi. So be like a leader, a general in Yehuda, ve'kron kibusi. And ekron will be like the Yivusi. So Ela Tartayuriot v'karkasiot shve'adom. These are the theaters or amphitheaters, v'karkasiot, and the circuses of Edom. That's one way to translate them. Tosafot brings an alternative translation, which is that karkasiot is yesh mefarshim batei avodat kochavim. That these were areas of worship of Avodah Zarah, and they are mechane utam. They're giving them a kinui, a nickname, in a negative sense, which is tartachot lashon cherpa, is embarrassment. V'karkasiot, Rutzel Lamar, Beit HaKiseh V'Lashon Arav. In Arabic, that is the equivalent of a restroom. And Tosafot in the end says it's hard to say that because of the next statement of the Gemara, which is that the Ke'aluf B'Yehuda V'Ekron K'Yivusi Eilu Tartiyot V'Karkasiyot Shebedom Sha'atidim Sarei Yehuda V'Lamei Behen Torah B'Rabim. That these are the theaters and the circuses of Edom, that in the future the leaders of Yehuda, the leaders of Klal Yisrael, will teach Torah publicly in these locations. So the way Rashi is explaining it is Vayak Aluf B'Yehuda, that they will be leaders in Yehuda, and Ekron Kivusi. And in Ekron, there will be places like Yivusi. Yivusi is a nickname for Yerushalayim, because Yerushalayim was an Ir Yivusi. So the Ekron, which we saw before, references Bat Edom. In Ekron, there will be places like Yerushalayim. And that is Ke'aluf B'Yehuda. They'll be like the leaders or the heads of Yehuda. So these places, these locations that are dedicated in Edom, whether they are theaters and circuses for the entertainment, or there are places for the gathering of the people in Edom, whose purpose in general is not positive, nevertheless, in the end, they will be utilized for positive purposes, in that they will allow the great leaders of Klal Yisrael to teach Torah in these locations. And of course, what comes to mind here is the Siyum Adaf Yomi, that takes the tremendous sports stadiums and gathers Jews together to celebrate and listen to Divrei Torah and to daven birabim. So here you have the tatriot and kirkasiot shebeadom that are being used to lameid behen Torah birabim. Am Rabbi Yitzchak, leshem zupamios. So he says, leshem is pamios. Pamios is actually mentioned in the Gemara in Bechorot as one of the sources for the Yarden, for the Jordan River, and is associated with the modern-day banyas, which is one of the sources of the banyas. And there it's described, leshem is the area in Dan, when Dan left their area in the south and went up north to conquer a second area, Tel Dan, and they established a beachhead for the Shevet HaDan up there. They went and conquered the areas of Leshem and Pamyus, which was the banyas in Tel Dan. Ekron Teaker, Zuke Zari Bat Edom, Sheita Metropolin Shel Melachim. It was a central city for the kings. Rashi gives you the etymology of the word. He says that metra comes from the word like matron, the mother, and polin means of rulership or leadership. So it was the mother of leadership, meaning that it was the center of leadership for the kings. Igadamre, Dimrabi Ba Melache. Why is it called that? Some say because they bring up the kings in that area, or the princes live in that area. It was a city of royalty. Igadamre, Demukmi Mina Malche. That sometimes the ruler of Caesarea was eventually appointed to be the emperor. Sometimes people got promoted from the metropolitan of the Melachim, or Ekron, to become a leader of the entire Roman Empire. So now the Gemara says, Kesari v'Yerushalayim. Now what's interesting here in general is that the Gemara is equating between a number of areas. Ekron, which is in the Navi, known as a city of the Plishtim. Nevertheless, it's here that the Gemara sees Ekron as being associated with Caesarea. That's number one. Number two is Tsur, Tyre, and Rome, or Bat Edom, are also associated with each other over here. And again, Caesarea is seen as the seat of the foreign government. So now you have Caesari v'Yerushalayim. Im yomar lecha adam charvushtehem al tamein. If a person says that both Caesarea and Yerushalayim are destroyed, do not believe him. Yashvushtehem, they're both settled, and they're both built up and enjoying a renaissance of sorts. Al tamein, do not believe him. Chorva Kezari v'yashva Yerushalayim. If they tell you that Kezariah is destroyed and Yerushalayim is flourishing, or Chorva Yerushalayim, or Yerushalayim is destroyed, v'yashva Kezari, and Kezari is inhabited and flourishing, tamein, then you can believe him. Shinemar, because it says in the Pasuk, il mal'a hecharava. I will fill in the desolation or the destruction. But now the Gemara Darshan said this way, im mleazu charvazu. If this one is full, meaning that it's built and flourishing, charvazu, the other one is destroyed. Im mleazu charvazu. Meaning that their existence is mutually exclusive. And we're going to see that from the next pasuk, which Rav Nachman Yitzchak Amar Mihalcha, that when Rivka goes to Lidrosha Telukim, when she has the twins inside of her of Esav and Yaakov, one of the things that is said to her is that the Om Yamatz, and that the two will be in constant challenge or battle, Om Yamatz, which is that the one will overcome the other. And that means that there's never a period in time where they are both ascendant. It's either Virav Yavod Sa'ir, the elder one will serve the younger one, that's when Yaakov is ascendant, or when the younger one, Yaakov, doesn't act appropriate, Om Yamatz, then he will be strengthened, and he will become ascendant and overthrow the younger one, and that's when Caesarea is ascendant, or Bnei Adom are ascendant. So the Om Yamatz, one of them will always be stronger than the other, either Yaakov or Esav will be ascendant. So here we see the mutually exclusive ability for the success of Edom and Yaakov, or Yaakov and Esav. And therefore the Gemara uses as representations of Yaakov, Yerushalayim, the center of Yadut, the capital of Eretz Yisrael, versus Caesarea, which is again the Roman capital, or the Roman rule inside of Eretz Yisrael. And so Gemara says that it can't be that Caesarea and Yerushalayim are coexisting. Is either one or the other, and that's the promise of the pasuk. V'amar Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk? Yuchan rasha, ba'lamad tzedek. Let you be favorably inclined towards the rasha, but he will not learn tzedek, he will not learn righteousness. Amar Yitzchak, nifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yitzchak says to Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Yuchan Esav,
be generous towards Esav. Show favor towards Esav. Amarlo Rashahu. God says back to him, he's evil. Amarlo Balamad Tzedek. There's nothing good that you can say about him. There's no schut, no tzedek that you have in his defense. Amarlo Be'eretz Nechochot Ya'avel. In the land that is upright, Ya'avel, he'll be perverse. As Rashi explains over here, that he's going to destroy Eretz Yisrael. Amarlo Imkain. If that is what he does, Bal Yireh Ge'ut Hashem, then he should not benefit to see the greatness of Hashem. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk? Al titen Hashem, mavayei rasha, zimamo al tapek, yerum musela. The pasuk pshat of the pasuk is that Hashem should not give in to the desires of the rishayim, and do not allow their evil plans to come to fruition, because otherwise they will be exalted. But the Gemara here plays on the Zemamo Altapeg. As Rashi explains, they are translating it as, do not take out his bit that is in his mouth. So, Amar Yaakov Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam, Al Titen Leisav Rasha Tavat Libo. Do not grant Esav the desires of his heart. Zemamo Altapeg. And do not take out his bit. As Rashi explains over here, Zemamo Altapeg, Al Tzienu Mnichirav. Do not take out the nose ring from his nose. Kamin Tabat Barzel. It's an iron nose ring. Shenotim Bechutma Shel Anaka, that you put in a female camel, which was very hard to domesticate. They were extremely wild. And the only way to keep a hold of them was to put an iron ring in their nose to grab a hold of them and to take control of them. So that's what they're saying here. Don't remove that ring by which you control them. Do not let them loose. So here the Gemara says, what is Zemamol Tapek? What does it mean? Do not remove the bit or the ring, the nose ring that keeps them under control. Zu Germamia Shel Edom. This is Germamia Shel Edom. There are alternative girsaot, the Grah, as well as the, I think it's an En Yaakov and Rav Yaakov Emden, all changed the girsa here to Germania Shel Edom. This references to Germany. Shumalei Hen Yotzim Machrivim Golam Golo. If they were to get together and unify themselves, they would destroy the whole world. Vama Rabbi Chama Bar Chanina Tlat Meak Tirei Taga Ikeber Germania Shel Edom. There are 300 tires of crowns, meaning that bearers of the crown, leaders in Germania Shel Edom. Utlat Meav Shitin B'Chamisha Marzavnei Ikeber Romi. And inside of Rome, there are 365, call them governors or leaders, chieftains of sorts. Ubichol Yoma. And each day they go out to battle with each other. And one of them gets killed. And they have to go back and replace the king or the one that got destroyed. So here the numbers of 300 or 365. 300 usually means an exaggeration. 365 are the solar days of the year. So here's some sort of indication that they had 365 leaders that ruled each on one day. And then they go out to battle each day, and then one of them is killed, and they have to find a replacement, and they have to appoint leaders. But basically what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that there is a huge divisiveness inside of the area of Germany, or Germania Shel Edom, which causes them to be bogged down in their internal strife. And since they're bogged down in their internal strife, they can't turn their sights outward to cause problems. And that's what Zamamo Altapek, don't take their bit from their mouth. I mean, keep them chewing on their internal issues, so they don't have time to look outward and to unify and destroy the world, because if they ever do get together, they destroy the whole world. And we know that's true in general, that throughout the ages, Germany was made up of fiefdoms or small tribal or state-like areas, but once they got themselves together and they unified under a single leadership, they were successful at destroying the entire world. And that's exactly what's being described here in the Gemara, especially according to those that have the girsa being Germania instead of Germania. V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So anyway, all of these quotes here are because the author of the positions are Rabbi Yitzchak, so we're having a number of memorable from Rabbi Yitzchak. Here's another one, very famous. Im yomar lecha adam, yegati velo matzati, I worked very hard, and I was not successful, al tamein, do not believe him. Lo yegati umatzati, I didn't try hard, and I was successful, al tamein, don't believe him. Yegati umatzati, I worked hard,
and I was successful. Tamein, you can believe him. Obviously, the last permutation which is left out is that if he says, lo yagati o lo matzati, I didn't work hard and I didn't find it, because obviously, there you can believe him. So, the Gemara says, hani mile b'divrei Torah. What we're talking about here is divrei Torah. Over masa b'matan, when it comes to business dealing, success and parnosa, siyato min shamayo. That all comes, that's mazel, that comes min ha-shamayim. Ule divrei Torah lo amran, and even within divrei Torah, we have to qualify that. That's only lechudude. That only has to do with how sharp you are. Aval ukme girsa, the ability to remember that which you learned, siyata min shamayahi. That is, again, something that is your mazel, something that comes min ha-shamayim. Now, if you look in Rashi, because it seems almost counterintuitive, you would think the ability to maintain whatever you've learned is just a matter of review. So the more you invest, the more likely you are to remember it. On the other hand, the chdude, to have a sharpness or a ability to discern and to make chakirot and so on and so forth, that you would think is siyata dishmaya, that's the capabilities of the individual. But here the Gemara says the opposite. And Rashi explains to you here, what does it mean? V'yesh yaga v'eino motze. Rashi says somebody, sometimes people try very hard and it doesn't work for them. I mean, a person could invest a lot, but unfortunately their memory doesn't keep up with them. They're unable to remember it. So there's no necessarily correlation between how hard you work and the amount that you remember. Truthfully, there is a correlation, but it's not a guarantee. Just because you work hard does not mean that you will remember it. And that's what Rashi says, that it's b'siyata dishmaya. Because even if you worked hard, there's a possibility that you won't know it. More likely you will. It's a greater percentage or a greater chance, but there's still a possibility that you won't. And that's what it means, b'siyata dishmaya. That it's not purely connected to the natural cause and effect of working hard, and therefore you will have. So that's why it's misiyata dishmaya. In masa matan, parnoso is all up to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So it doesn't matter how hard you work or how little you work, it's all in Hashem's hands in the end to bring you the parnoso that you need. So the one area where we say, L'divrei Torah l'omran el'chdude. L'chdude is subject to yagati u'matzati. That a person was able to be discerning and to understand and reconcile and work through the Gemara, that is something yagatu matzati, a person who delves in, a person who invests, will succeed. And there's a guarantee of a correlation between investment and success. Rama Rabbi Yitzchak, im ra'ita rasha shasha'a misacheket lo, al titgare bo. If you see a person who's evil, a bad person, who the time is playing for him, which means basically things are going well for him, Al tit garebo, don't start up with him. Don't provoke him. Shneamar al titchar bimreim. Do not provoke those that are doing evil, those that are doing bad. Vloot elo shedrachav matzlichim. Not only should you not provoke him, but he's going to be very successful. Shneamar yachilu drachav becholet. His paths are clear and successful at every moment. Vloot elo shezochev bedin. That when he gets an adjudication, it goes in his favor. Shneamar marom mishpatecha minegdo. The judgments rise up from opposite him. V'lo od elishruve b'sunav. He sees his success versus his enemy. Shneamar kol tzorav yafiach behem. That all of those that cause him anguish or pain, yafiach behem, you'll blow them and they'll disappear. So you see that in a time when a rasha is sha'a misachekit, though things are going well for him, don't contend with him. Don't start up with him. Don't provoke him, because at that moment, things are all going to go well for him. It's not just his business dealings. It's not just what you see. It's a complete success, which means that if you have to go to court, you're going to lose, and that he will override his enemies. So it's not worth having an altercation or contending with such an individual. Why says that really true? Ini? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai mutar leitgarot b'rashayim b'lama zeh. You can provoke, and you can start up with Rishayim in this world, Shneamar. Ozvei Torah yahalu rasha. Those that leave the Torah, the Rishayim will praise them. Vishomrei Torah yidgaru bam. But those that are the protectors of the Torah, the guards of Torah, yidgaru bam. They will provoke, they will engage with them, contend with them. Betanya, Rabbi Dostai bar Maton Omer, Amar mutar li'itgarot b'rishayim b'olam hazeh. In this world, you're allowed to start up with the Rishayim. Vimlashcha adam lomar, if somebody whispers you to say, Al titcharer bimireim, v'al tikaneh b'osei avla, don't contend with those that are doing bad. Do not be jealous of those that are doing perverseness. So that's mi shelubo nokfo umerkein. That's someone who's worried about their sins, says that. But the true person, the true tzaddik, has no fear. And he will start up with the rishaim without any considerations. So where it says, Ella, the way to properly read that pasuk is, al titchar bimreim liot kimireim. Do not contend with those that are evil to be like them. Do not be jealous of those that are perverse, the otko seavla, to become like them. So the altidchar and altikaneh is that you shouldn't not engage them, contend with them, but you should not try to be like them. You should not be jealous of their success, and you should not provoke yourself to be like them. Ve'omer. And it also says, Al yikaneh libcha b'chataim, that your heart should not be jealous of those that are sinners. So you see here that the meaning of the pasuk is not about provoking of kin'ah, you know, kanaim pogim bo, which is a lashon of girui milchama, if starting up or engaging, contending with the individual. But now the Gemara says that it doesn't mean that, but rather kin'ah means literally jealousy, or Titchar means shalotechos v'masav. You shouldn't grab on to engage in his actions. So the psukim don't mean don't provoke them, but rather do not emulate them. Do not be jealous of them. It says lokasho habamili didei habamili dishmayo. Depends why you're contending with the rasha. If it's because the shem shamayim, it's in defense of a kadosh baruch hu, there you can start up with them. Bamili didei, when it has to do with your personal matters, stay far away. Because when things are going well for him, he's going to ride right over you. Both of them deal with your matters. That is, the person who's a complete tzaddik, that's the individual who can start up with Rishayim. Here we're talking about a person who's not perfect. Not perfect in the sense of absolutely perfect, but a person is not generally a tzaddik. He's a benoni. And therefore, he shouldn't start up with the Rishayim. So only a tzaddik gamur can stand up or start up with the Rishayim. If you look back, who was the Bala Memra who says that you should start up with the Rishayim? It was Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Mishimon ben Yochai. Shimon ben Yochai, of course, is a person who's Kulo Torah, a person who's a Tzadik Gamur, so he's the one making that statement. But for everybody else, Abba Tzadik Sheino Gamur, there we say, stay away. Damar Rav Huna, my dechtiv, what is meant by the Pasuk? Lama Tabit Bogdim. Why do you watch rebellious ones? Tacharish, be silent, bibala rashat tzaddik mimenu. When an evil person swallows the one who's more righteous than him. Tzaddik mimenu boleya. Only someone who is relatively more of a tzaddik than him can he swallow. Tzaddik gamur eno boleya. But if he's a complete righteous individual, he can't swallow him. So a rashat can only swallow someone who's on a relative basis more righteous than he. But if he's objectively more righteous, then the rashat can't touch him. So there we see this distinction between a tzaddik gamur and someone who's not a tzaddik gamur. Depends. Normally, Rabbi Yochanan's right. You can provoke them, you can start with them, you can contend with them. But here is a time when the mazel of the rasha is going well, you back off. At that time, you don't start with them, you don't engage with them. So it's a time when you have to desist or you pull yourself away, because it's a time where his successes will override your tzidkut. Amar Ula, Italia shel Yavan, ze krach gadol shel Romi. Italia, Italy of Greece, that is the great city of Rome. Vahavya tlat mea parsa al tlat mea parsa. It was 300 parsaot by 300 parsaot. Again, generally in the Gemara, when you use the word 300, that's an exaggeration. It means extremely large. Rashi over here quotes the Midrash of Italia Shavan, krach gadol shel gadol bishvil avon menashet. It's a great city that was generated by the sin of Menasheh. When he brought in an idol to the Echal, that was one of the possibilities of what happened. Behumad Tselem Be'echal. Yarad Gabriel V'natz Kana B'yam. Gabriel comes down and puts a post into the ocean. And then either or sirton alalav, that a bunch of gravel and dirt gathered around the post. And upon that, the Italy of Greece was built. So that's where the city of Rome came from. There's another midrash that associates the same thing with the Shlomo HaMelech, when he took Bat Paro. So I think that midrash is even more interesting, because that means at the moment of the consecration of the Mikdash, the start of the Mikdash, the destruction of the seeds of destruction of the Mikdash are already planted. Meaning that the building of Bayit Rishon by Shlomo HaMelech, at that point, the seeds for the destruction by Rome of the second Bayit was already planted. And that's because that at the time when Shlomo is building the Mikdash and consecrating the Mikdash, he's also marrying Bat Paro, which is seen as something that was wrong or inappropriate. And in addition, the same thing by Menashe. By Menashe is who emit selim b'heichal, the one who started putting Avodah Zarah into the Heichal. That one who profaned the Mikdash also generates the destroyers or the eventual destroyers of the Mikdash. So here is the city of Rome that is 300 by 300 parsot. It has 365 different marketplaces. Here the Gemara tells you why, because it's like the days of the solar year. And the smallest one of them is the poultry. It was 16 by 16 mil. And each day the king would go out and dine in one of these different marketplaces. Someone who lives in Rome, even though he wasn't born there, he got an allocation, he got some sort of subsidy from the palace, from the king. Someone who was born in Rome, doesn't live there, also gets a sum of money, an allocation, an allowance from the king. And there are 3,000 bathhouses there. And there are 500 windows that allow the smoke to rise outside of the walls. And Rashi over here says that the windows were above the wall so that the smoke went and didn't interfere, it didn't blacken the walls. Some read as referencing the city. And others say it referencing the Beibani, the bathhouses. So it's not clear, the different girsaot here, which depending on the girsa, which like you can see on the side, b'chol echad v'echad chamesh miot chalonot. There it's referencing back to the Beibani, to the bathhouses, otherwise it's an independent statement about the walls. Tzido cha echad yam. One side is fortified by the ocean. Tzido echad harim ugvot. One side is mountainous and has peaks. Another side has a wall of iron. The other side is like a gravel and traps or swamps as the protection on that side. So here you have a description of Rome. The way the Marsha reads it is that just like the rewards that are mentioned here for the Rishaim, Balamazah, you can see how great the rewards are. So too, the tzaddikim should be certain that latid lavo, that their rewards will far exceed anything that's seen here. The glory of Rome will be pale in comparison to the reward of the tzaddikim latid lavo. The other thing is that it's also describing here the hedonism of Rome, which was the goal in the Roman Empire, was to accumulate wealth and to enjoy as much as possible, which is represented by the 365 days, which is the solar year. Bnei Yisrael follow the lunar calendar. Esav Edom follows the solar calendar. And the Shvakim represent the idea of conspicuous spending, the consumerism, the hedonism of Rome, and the same as the bathhouses and so on and so forth. It reminds you of the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah, where Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is discussing about what the Romans have contributed. And over there, we have the difference of opinions about whether when they built all their marketplaces and their roads and the bathhouses, were they doing that to benefit civilization, or were they doing that for their hedonism and their personal benefit? And over here, the Gemara is stating that it seems to be was done for their personal benefit. It was something that they saw as the purpose in life, and something that we are differentiated from, and that we disassociate ourselves from. All right, now we move on to the next Mishnah. Next Mishnah begins a series of Mishnayot called the Ein Bein, which are famous in Megillah, which is the Mishnayot here, compare two similar items and say there's no difference between this and that, except for, and it gives you the key differences between two items that are very similar. So, Karuat HaMegillah BeAdar Rishon, if they read the Megillah on the first month of Adar, V'nitabra Shana, after already they had read the Megillah, they make it into a leap year, and now there's an Adar Sheni. Kurim Ota BeAdar Sheni, they have to read it again in Adar Sheni. Ein Bein Adar Rishon Adar Sheni, there's no difference between the first Adar and the second Adar, Ela Kriyat Megillah U'Matanot Evyonim. The only difference is that in the second Adar, you read the Megillah and you give Matanot Evyonim, otherwise they are completely equal. So Gemara says, Halin Yan Tzeder Parshiot Zivizeh Shavim? Are you trying to suggest here that for the Arba Parshiot that are associated with Adar, that it makes no difference between the first month of Adar and the second month of Adar? Mani, then who's the author of our Mishnah? Mani Matnita, and who's the author of our Mishnah? Lo Tana Kamav, Lo Rabbi Eliezer B'Rabbi Yossi, Lo Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel. We have here three different opinions that we're going to bring in a Braita, and none of them reconcile with our Mishnah and the Tanya. Karu et ha-Megillah b'Adar Rishon. They read the Megillah in the first month of Adar. V'nita brashana, and then all of a sudden they had a leap year. Korino et ha-Adar Sheni. Then you have to read it in Adar Sheni. So this is what the Tanakh says. Shukol mitzvot shenogot b'sheni nogot b'rishon chutz mimikra Megillah. That any mitzvah that you can do in the second Adar, you can do in the first Adar, with the exception of Kriyat ha-Megillah. Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi omer in Korino et ha-Adar Sheni. You don't read it in Adar Sheni. Shekol mitzvot shenogot b'sheni nogot b'rishon. Because any mitzvah you do in the second month, you do in the first month. Meaning for Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Yossi, the first Adar is the primary Adar. You do read it again in Adar Sheni. Shekol mitzvot shenogot b'sheni ein nogot b'rishon. Any mitzvah you can do in the second month, you cannot do in the first month of Adar. V'shavin, and everybody agrees, v'esved v'tanit shosurim b'zeh b'zeh. When it comes to Hespin and Tanit, doesn't matter Adar Rishon, doesn't matter Adar Sheni, the 14th and the 15th in both of these periods of time are restricted in Hespin and Tanit. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Hainu Tanakamo. Gemara says in the end, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Tanakamo are the same, which is they require you to read the Megillah again. So Amar Papa, Seder Parshiot Igminayu. Now the difference between them is the Arba Parshiot. The Tanakamo Savar Lachat Chila B'Sheni. That you should do things in Adar Sheni. Ba'avud B'Rishon Avud. But if you did it in the first Adar, then you're okay. You're Yotze b'diavad, chutz bar, mimikra Megillah. Except for reading Megillah, dafagav de korub rishon, korub sheni. That even though you read it in the first month, you have to read it again in the second month. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yossi, savar, afilu mikra Megillah, dechat chila b'rishon. Lezer, Rabbi Yossi says, no, even mikra Megillah should be do in the first Adar. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, savar, afilu seder parshiot, I korub rishon, korub sheni. Shimon Gamliel says, no, that anything that you need to do must be done in the Adar Sheni. And so for him, the Arba Parshiot must be done in Adar Sheni. So Mani, who's the author of our Mishnah? E Tanakamo, if it's the Tanakamo of the Braita, Kasha Matanot. The only thing that he says you have to repeat in Adar Sheni is Mikra Megillah. He doesn't mention you have to also do Matanot Yevyonim again in Adar Sheni. E Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Kasha, Nami, Mikra Megillah. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi, even the reading of the Megillah is a problem, because Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yossi says you do everything in the Adar Rishon. So why are you reading the Megillah again in Adar Sheni, according to our Mishnah? E Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Kasha Seder Parshiot. Then you have a problem, because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, according to the way we learned in the Braita, says that the Arba Parshiot have to be read in Adar Sheni. Where according to the Diok out of our Mishnah, that you only read Mikra Megillah and Matanot Yevyonim the second month of Adar, that means the Seder Parshiot stay in the first month. So who's the author of our Mishnah? Gemara says, Olam Tanakamo. It's the Tanakamo. V'tanak Mikra Megillah. V'adin Matanot Yevyonim. He only mentions that you have to repeat. And the Braita, the Tanakamo, only mentions you have to repeat Mikra Megillah in the second month. But automatically, along with Mikra Megillah, comes Matanot Yevyonim. Why? Dahaba Hatalya. They're connected. They're dependent on each other. We saw this in yesterday's daf. We saw in the daf before. That when it comes to the Kriyat HaMegillah for the Kfarim, they give Matanot Yevyonim when they read the Megillah, because Enei Aniim, the eyes of Aniim are looking forward to that. When they hear that the Megillah is going to be read, they assume that there's going to be Matanot Yevyonim. So there's a deep-seated connection between them. And that's why, if you say Mikra Megillah, you also must mean Matanot Yevyonim. V'bayitayim ad olam Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. But no, the author of our mission is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Umatnit and chasuri mechzera, and our mission is missing a couple of key words. Vachiktani ain bein arba'asar shib adar rishon liyedalid b'adar sheni. It's not comparing the month of Adar Sheni to the month of Adar Rishon. It's comparing the 14th of Adar Rishon to the 14th of Adar Sheni. What are the differences between the 14th and each of these two? So there's no difference. Ela Mikra, Megillah, Umatanot, Evyonim. But the Arba Parshiot, which are associated with the month itself, those are not a differentiating factor that is being mentioned in the Mishnah. They tried to know. You're allowed to make a leap year until the end of Adar. So there were times where, at the last minute, they did make a leap year. But generally, we saw this before in the Gemara, that they were supposed to already, Rosh Hashanah time, declare whether there would be a leap year or not. So they were supposed to give advance notice to people whether there'd be a leap year. But for whatever reason, there were times or there was some sort of event that changed things or dynamically moved things. So they did have the possibility of making a leap year late in the year, even though generally that was not the practice, and we dissuade people from doing that. Correct. This Braita is not just a theoretical case. There's a distinct possibility that something like this could happen, where they did all these things in Adar Rishon, and all of a sudden they find out that there's going to be another Adar, and now they have to deal with it. What do they do at this point? So therefore, when it says the difference between Yudalit and Adar Rishon and Yudalit Adar Sheni is Mikra Megillah Matanot. Halein Hespeid V'Tanit Zevezeh Shavim. The guard says Hespeid and Tanit, they're equal. V'Ilusayda Parshiot Lomairi. And the issue of the Arba Parshiot we're not dealing with because we're only dealing with a single day. We've narrowed the Mishnah to talk about the single day, not about the month as a whole. So, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bav and Amar Rabbi Yochanan Hilchotag Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Shamar Mishum Rabbi Yossi. That the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, which is our practice that everything needs to be repeated in the second month of Adar, or basically the second month of Adar is the primary month for all the mitzvot. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ushnei Mikra Echad Darshu. They both learned it out from one pasuk, which says Bechol Shana Vishana. We've seen this pasuk before that every year needs to be the same. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Yossi, Savar, B'chol Shana V'Shana, Ma, Kol Shana V'Shana, Adar Samuch L'Shvat. Just like in every other year, the Adar that you celebrate Purim is the one that is adjacent to Shvat. Avkan Adar Samuch L'Shvat. So to over here, when are you going to celebrate all the mitzvot of Purim and the month of Adar? In the month of Adar that's closer to Shvat. Rabbi Shimon Leo, Savar, B'chol Shana V'Shana, Ma, Kol Shana V'Shana, Adar Samuch L'Nisan. Then every other year, Adar is adjacent to Nisan. Avkan Adar Samuch L'Nisan. So to here, the adjacency to Nisan should trump, and they should do it in the second Adar. Gemara says, Bishlamad, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi, Mistaver Taima. I can understand why Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi would have such a position. Dei Mavirin ala mitzvot. Because you don't want to pass by a mitzvah. If you have a choice between a mitzvah and doing an Adar Aleph and another Bet, we're going to opt to do it in Adar Aleph. So we should bring the mitzvot forward. We should celebrate it in Adar Aleph. But, Elo Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, my Taima. Why does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel think the second Adar is more important? In Okanami, Ein Marvina Mitzvot is a good enough reason to say that we should do everything in the first month of Adar and not in the second month of Adar. The Gemara says, well, I'll explain to you what the reason is of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Amar Rabbi Tabi, time of the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Mismaku Ula Lugula Odif. I have another factor here which I need to consider, which is I want to get the Geula, the redemption of Purim, close to the redemption of Pesach. That there's an idea of Mismaku Ula Lugula. That juxtaposing the two different redemptions, the redemption of Purim to the redemption of Pesach, and that would push you towards having the Purim be done in the second month of Adar. If you remember, Rashi in the Gemara Tanit says, Mishenichnas Adar, Marbim B'Simcha. What was so unique about Adar? So Rashi said over there, Sheyesh Bo, Purim V'Gulat Mitzrayim. He mentioned that Adar is colored not only by Purim, but also by its juxtaposition, its adjacency to Nisan and Yitziat Mitzrayim. So Adar draws from that, and that's what makes it a unique month. I would also say that Purim and Pesach have a number of overlapping factors, including the fact that the Shloshim Yom Lifnei HaPesach that you start to be Doresh is on Purim. So the 30 days before Pesach, which I would say is the sphere of influence of the holiday, because you start to learn about the holiday from 30 days before, which means when you're within the context of the holiday, that takes place on Purim. So the context of Pesach begins on the day of Purim. So that's a Mismach Gula de Gula. The Gula of Purim kicks off the context or the Gula of Mitzrayim. That's one thing to note. The other thing to note is the Lashon that is found in the Megillah. If you compare the language in the Megillah that talks about the turnaround and the change and the dynamic that happened in the story of Purim, and you look in the Haggadah that we read on Pesach, in the Brocha that we make at the end of the Haggadah, right before our Shulchan Aruch, or if you look in the Brocha, the language that's taken is almost identical to the language of the Megillah. And so you see there a play on this idea of the Gula, or the turnaround that's happening, that there's a connection between the Gula of Purim and the Gula of Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Gula of Pesach. And that is that they represent two different types of redemption. Yitziat Mitzrayim is a Nes Galui, a redemption or a Gula that was unequivocally the result of Hashem's intervention. Purim, on the other hand, is a Nes Nistar. It's Hashem's intervention, which is not always so apparent. Not so obvious. Yet, what we say here is mismach geula legeula, that we connect between these two redemptions to show that they are equal as geulot, that they represent different types of ways that Hashem intervenes and brings redemption to His people, both through a nes galui and a nes nistar. And once again, brings up, as we've spoken about more recently, the Ramban at the end of Parshat Bo, that we always have to, through the nisim geluim, through that which transpired in Yitziat Mitzrayim, we has to give us perspective on everything that transpires in the world, even the mundane, even the everyday items, but especially the Nisim HaNistarim that Hashem provides for us. We have to see in that the Yad Hashem. And we have to see that the success of Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael and the ability to survive and succeed against the wishes of our enemies is really a Nes Nistar, the Yad Hashem that protects us, that brings us such a geula. So that's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says is the primary thing we need to focus on is this michud geula de geula. Lazar Mar Taimit Rabbi Shimon Gamliel mihocho. No, he has a different reason. Dichtiv, the kayemet igeret ha-purim azot ha-shenit. To keep this letter of Purim the second time. Vitzrech le-michtav shenit. Vitzrech le-michtav b'chol shana v'shana. So shenit means the second, and here he's playing on the second, meaning the second month of Adar. And I need both of these. I need the word shenit, and I need michta b'chol shana v'shana. It's the same as every year. D'imikol shana v'shana. If it's just I should do it the way I do it every year, havamina k'kushyan. Well, that's like our question. Why don't you do it in the first month? Because that's also like every year where it's close to Shvat. K'mash v'lana shenit, that you do it in the second month. Iyash v'minina shenit, if you just told me the second one that it was Adar sheni, havamina b'tchila b'rishon u'b'sheni. You can do it either way. You can do it in the rishon and the sheni. Don't have to do it in the sheni. You have to do it like you did it in every other year, which means you do it in that month that is close to Nisan. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yossi, hi shenit my avilei. Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yossi says that he keeps Adar Rishon. What does he do with the word shenit? Mibayalei k'derav Shmuel bar Yehuda. He needs it for the limud of Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda. B'tchila kavua b'shushan. In the beginning, they establish it in Shushan. V'sof b'chol olam kulo. And afterwards, it's spread to the outlying or the other areas. That's what it means, shenit. In the first place, it was established in Shushan and Shenit. Afterwards, it was established more broadly in the whole world or Paras Umadai. Okay, we'll stop over here.